Locked On Red Sox, your daily Boston Red Sox podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On Red Sox on the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Gabrielle, founder of Girl at the Game. And before I start talking about the Red Sox and some pitchers that might be of interest to them, I just want to make a little personal announcement, which is that I will be taking on an expanded role with the Locked On Podcast Network, heading up social media for the entire Major League Baseball branch of the network. And I'm so excited and honored to help this network and be a part of this network. And it all started with hosting this podcast. So I'm very excited to get to work. Today's episode is part two of my conversation with Aram from last week. We took a little bit of a pause due to the holiday weekend, but we're back with part two. If you missed part one, we talked all about pitching prospects and the current pitching rotation of the Red Sox. And if you want to make sure that you never miss an episode, make sure to subscribe on whatever podcast medium you are using to listen to Locked On Red Sox so you never miss an episode. Now, before I play part two, which is not about pitchers, I want to talk about pitchers for a second because there are two pitchers in particular that could be of interest to the Boston Red Sox on the open market right now. The first is Jose Ureña, who was DFA'd by the Marlins today. The 29-year-old has been their opening day starter in two of the last three seasons, but did struggle this season. He has a career 4.60 ERA in 142 games with the Marlins, 98 of them starts, and he was, until today, their longest tenured player. They DFA'd him to make room on the roster for a reliever acquired from the Cleveland Indians in exchange for cash considerations. So, Jose Ureña, not exactly a superstar like Trevor Bauer, but at this point, as we know, the Red Sox are not looking for quality, they're looking for quantity. Basically, any warm body who can get out there, start a game, and last for 4 to 5, maybe 6 innings if they're lucky, and Jose Ureña could very well fit that mold. He's definitely an affordable option for this team. He was likely to be due about $4 million in arbitration this year, and the way that the Marlins' up-and-coming pitching is looking, it would have pushed him out of the rotation and definitely wouldn't have been room for him on the roster. Must be nice to have that problem of having too many viable pitching options. So look for Jose Ureña maybe to be on Chaim Bloom's mind in the coming weeks. The Red Sox got off to a hot start of the offseason by rehiring Alex Cora, but ever since then, it's been pretty much the way the last few offseasons have gone. Not a lot to talk about on the hot stove, mostly just rumors and waiting to find out where the biggest names like Trevor Bauer are going to end up, maybe George Springer. But it is worth noting, speaking of George Springer, that a division rival is also interested in the outfielder. The Toronto Blue Jays are apparently interested in the superstar former Astro, now free agent. MLB Trade Rumors projects that George Springer would get somewhere in the ballpark, pun intended, of a 5-year, $125 million deal. So both he and Jackie Bradley are probably the two best names on the free agent market right now. Personally, I would prefer JBJ, but Springer is a New England native. He grew up in Connecticut, went to UConn, and played on the UConn men's baseball team with current Red Sox pitcher Matt Barnes. So he would definitely be interested in coming home. It's a matter of which of the two of them the Red Sox will choose. Or maybe they'll choose neither, and our center field will remain unguarded. Another arm that the Red Sox could target on a bullpen angle is fellow free agent Trevor May. The former Twins righty recently turned 31 years old, and he was a top 100 prospect way back in 2012, which shockingly was 8 years ago. But he really struggled as a starter and was switched to a full-time bullpen role back in 2016. And he struggled in that first season with a 5.27 ERA. But since then, he has improved despite having Tommy John in spring training in 2017. And missing the entire season along with a good part of 2018. But since then, he has been one of the stronger relievers in the game, as surprising as that might be to hear. In 3 of the last 4 years, he's had at least a 30% strikeout rate, including almost 40% this season. And yes, obviously 2020 will forever be a very small sample size due to it only being a 60-game season. But Trevor May is one of the most underrated bullpen arms on the market. Lest we forget, the Red Sox are in need of both starting pitching and bullpen arms, and Trevor May could also be a somewhat affordable option. Major League Baseball Trade Rumors is predicting that he will receive something like a $14 million deal over 2 years. Fangraphs is predicting a 2-year deal worth $10 million. If they do make an offer, Boston will probably make a lower end offer, just knowing how Chaim Bloom operates, but he definitely could and should be someone that the Red Sox look into. Before I play part two of my conversation with Aram, let's talk about Built Bar for a second, because Built Bar makes protein bars that taste like candy bars. Each of these bars is low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber. Somehow soft and easy to chew, each bar is covered in 100% chocolate, and they have 18 amazing flavors, including both nut and nut-free flavors. These bars are great if you need an afternoon pick-me-up, if you want to indulge in a sweet treat, but you still want to be healthy, you want to lose or maintain weight, Built Bar is perfect for you. They're great for the keto diet because, like I said, they are low sugar. And for a limited time only, they are giving our listeners 20% off your order when you go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON. And it doesn't matter if you are a repeat buyer or a first-time customer, you can get that 20% off no matter how many times you order, because Built Bar knows that once you try a Built Bar, you are going to want more. So again, that's promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com.
The offense, we know, is not a question, but the prospects too. I mean, there's so many good offensive prospects. It seems like they almost have too much offense where that's going to be a problem.
We talked about that last time, remember?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's still a question. Like, it's only gotten, you know, somewhat more crowded with Jeter Downs looking like he's going to make a push for at least a midseason spot, and he is a stud. You got even guys, just like middling guys, like CJ Chatham, who I think is a really good utility guy, that is just a consistent hitter and can play all over the field. Like, where are all these guys going to find at-bats? Maybe do you use CJ Chatham and some other of those middling prospects for a pitcher? Like, what can you acquire with that? Like, there's so many questions. But I'm very interested to see what happens. But I'm expecting a lot from the offense. I really am. I think JD Martinez is going to bounce back. I think he's going to be perfectly fine. I'm very curious about Benintendi, right? Because what's up with him? It's time for him to start to figure it out, right? Like, he's supposed to be a star by now. He's 26 though, so there's plenty of time. Verdugo, I love. And you remember I made the case for the Mookie Betts return a little bit on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Of course, you're never going to get a return that's right for Mookie Betts, especially given how they were handcuffed and had no leverage. But Verdugo is a stud. Jeter Downs is great. And don't forget about Wong. I think Wong could be very productive in a catching utility Austin Barnes for the Dodgers type of role. He's got a lot more power than Austin Barnes. So I think that there's this offense is dynamic and versatile, and there's so much there. They just have to piece together the pitching. It doesn't even have to be great. And they'll make a push for a playoff spot.
It's interesting. I actually, when the season ended, I wrote up Chaim Bloom's offseason to-do list, listing out the very obvious things that they have to do. I mean, this isn't like a finesse issue. This is an issue of, like, you have areas where you blatantly do not have people, and you need to have people for that part of your team in order to play baseball in a non-embarrassing way. Like, this isn't really a question of, well, how good, like, who can we get who's really good? It's just like, you need starters, you need relievers. You need to either figure out Matt Barnes or you need a new closer. Like, these are very obvious questions. This isn't like, you know, the Dodgers trying to pick between their 8 million amazing prospects. Must be nice. But yes, I remember we talked about the offensive talent in the high levels of their minor league system. And that's one of the things I outlined. I said, well, Chaim Bloom needs to kind of decide which players are actually a part of this team's future and which of these players can be bundled for a trade to acquire the pitching that you need now, because you don't need 15 infielders. You just don't. You already have Xander and Devers. You have Michael Chavis, who is still striking out way too much, but has been good especially defensively, and can play multiple positions. And then you have all of these guys coming up who can play a plethora of the same positions, and you do not need all of them. But what you do need is you need to figure out your outfield. It does not look good for Jackie Bradley Jr., and you need to figure out your pitchers. I do think Wong can be a great backup. But other than that, I mean, I don't know. Jeter Downs is really good. I don't know where he's going to slot in with Xander. I remember during the first spring training, Jeter Downs played some shortstop on the days that Xander was not playing, because I think he came into spring training hurt.
Yeah, he was a little banged up.
Yeah, it's interesting to see who's going to stay and who's going to go. I just remember Jerry Remy, in his book, he talked about the days when he was working in the minor leagues. He wanted to be a coach, and he said that it was very obvious. You could tell who were the players who were there to be developed and who were the players who were there to play with the players being developed, you know, like kind of like seat fillers at a Hollywood award show. And so I'm very curious to see who Chaim Bloom thinks is worth keeping and who Chaim Bloom thinks is worth bundling for somebody that's immediately ready.
Absolutely. And that's going to come, you know, with some other questions too. And that's why this lost minor league season really sucks, because Tristan Casas, for me, he's a local kid from down in South Florida. And I faced him in high school when he was a kid. You know, like I was a senior and he was 14. I think he was like a freshman in high school, and was hitting 400-foot home runs. So at that point, I was like ready to watch this kid. So I'd kept an eye on him through high school, and he somehow exceeded the insane expectations that he had, right? He was the first, I believe one of the first players, if not the first player ever, to be committed to a Power 5 school in eighth grade when he was committed to the University of Miami. Like, this kid has been a phenom since a young age. And sometimes those guys have that like prospect fatigue, I like to call it, where they have these crazy expectations and it's impossible to meet them because it's just so long and they almost go stale. With Casas, it really isn't the case. He continues to look better and better. I've seen some video from the time off, and his swing is just so darn good. It's so repeatable. He has so much power. He's very athletic for a first baseman. He's got a rocket for an arm, and he's a guy to me that can fast track to the bigs. I think he has a very advanced approach. I think that he is one of those guys that is really not going to need the seasoning that most players need that are high school draftees. That being said, he missed a lot of time with an injury, and then he only played 118 games in 2019, you know, in A ball before just playing two games in high A. So did not get a lot of experience under his belt. Did have an opportunity at the alternate training site, I believe, right, to get some at-bats in there once he got moved up and get some reps in. But if Casas looks like he's on a fast track, I don't think he'll be up next year. But that's something that definitely goes into, you know, the decisions that you have to make, because he, in my opinion, is the next big thing in Boston. We're talking about a guy that's going to be there for a long time, that is going to be a fan favorite, offensive force. If everything works out and he develops the way I think he can, because he really is incredible. And from what I've heard from people in the game, players, evaluators, you know, when you look at MLB Pipeline having Downs ahead of Casas, I've had some people say that is just asinine. And I love Jeter Downs just because of how good Tristan Casas is. It shouldn't even be close. It's him and then everybody else. And that's just as a first baseman, because he's that good offensively. And I can just imagine what he's going to do in Fenway Park. He drives the ball to all fields. He's going to pepper the wall the other way. He's going to yank home runs down the right field line. Like, I'm so excited, and I have no ties to the Red Sox to see what this guy can do. That being said, you know, let's say he makes a push. You have Michael Chavis. I don't think he's tall enough to play first base like full time, but Bobby Dalbec is also that kind of swing and miss first baseman, corner infield profile. You have Devers too. You know, at that point, you know, you cross that bridge when you get there, but maybe you can make a move now knowing that Casas is going to be knocking on the door soon, because Chavis and Dalbec to me are a little bit redundant, even though Chavis can't really play first base and Dalbec can. Maybe Chavis can, you know, better than me. I have not seen too many first basemen that are 5'10", and that's a generous list, yeah, I think, on Chavis.
It's interesting with Chavis because he's played a lot of second base, but he actually had never played second base until making his major league debut. Like, he literally made his major league debut in April of 2019 and had never played. He came up as a 3B and 1B and then just they didn't need him at that spot. And then, of course, he was splitting time with Mitch Moreland, who, of course, is much taller than Michael Chavis. I think Chavis is interesting for those exact reasons, you know, because they have moved him around a lot. He's kind of been like the substitute teacher. You know, they just kind of use him where they need him. But it's interesting because one of the worries has been Devers, because his defense had a sharp decline this year from last year. You know, he started off 2019 being terrible defensively and not great offensively. And then all of a sudden in like May, he basically said something like, my defense is unacceptable. And then he didn't make an error for like 4 months after having, you know, seven to start the season or something ridiculous like that. So we know that he is capable. And the weird thing with him is that he makes the most ridiculously difficult looking defensive outs look flawless, but he bungles the most basic plays. And it'll be interesting to see how that works this year now that Cora's coming back. But I did suggest at the time in 2019, I think, moving him to first base, because one of his biggest problems was that he was always overthrowing first base. And I said, well, he won't have that problem if he's the first baseman. I don't know how that plays out. I honestly didn't even think about Dalbec. That's yet another person that they have who plays the infield. And all of a sudden, I'm thinking we have no real outfield prospects besides Jaren Duran, who I don't think is ready. And then we have like 85 infielders.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I think you got to use that plethora to your advantage, right? I mean, CJ Chatham is not the most valuable prospect in the world at this point. He's 25, but he is major league ready. And if a team needs an infielder, he's a consistent hitter and he's a high floor guy. That's a great addition to whatever, you know, one of the guys that you want to part with, and you decide, you know, we can go get somebody. You also keep in mind that there's a lot of depth compared to other positions, I think, for the Red Sox as the infield, right? Blaze Jordan is far, far away from being ready, but that's another infielder. And Connor Wong, as we mentioned, close to major league ready, he can play the spots in the infield. So like you can swallow, you know, the I guess little hit of giving up an infielder. It's just, which one do you give up? If you ultimately move on from Chavis, for example, how does that open things up for you? I think Dalbec and Chavis are a bit redundant, but I think Chavis right now is just the better hitter. Dalbec looked great. But the peripherals are a little bit concerning for me on Dalbec. Like sometimes he defies it. So maybe he can continue to defy the ridiculous strikeout rates. He did it in Double A and he did it in his stint in the bigs this year. I mean, he hit 263 with a 359 on base, despite striking out, you know, almost 40% of the time. So who knows? But I think, again, having the shortened season definitely makes Chaim Bloom's decisions and job a lot more difficult. But there definitely needs to be some shuffling around to be done. Because, again, Jeter Downs is knocking on the door, too. There's just crowded out there. Exactly. There's so many people just trying to get in.
We're talking about this, and this roster, we're talking about a roster that already has Dalbec, Chavis, Bogarts, Devers, Tsui Lin sometimes. I'm already forgetting someone. But, I mean, that only proves my point, that we already have more than enough infielders at the major league level. And now we're talking about like most of the people that we would be normally looking forward to seeing make a debut, we don't actually need them.
Yeah, there's no pressure, really. Like you don't even need to push them. And that's the crazy thing is like at this point, you need Downs to be up there and be ready to go because he's ready to go. He doesn't need to show anything else. And they go get a couple other guys too, Hudson Potts and that – in that trade for Mitch Moreland. Potts has struggled in his career so far in the minors, but he's a first-round pick. He's a high-ceiling guy if he figures it out. Another outfield prospect, Jason Rosario, another guy I like that came over in that Moreland trade. So there's some interesting guys that kind of got plugged into the system too. I thought they got a good return on the Moreland trade, especially considering he ends up getting his option declined. So you got two top 30 prospects for 70 at-bats of Mitch Moreland. It's a good deal. So the system's definitely better. But yeah, as we said, a lot of interesting decisions to be made. And I'm sure we'll be talking about it again as it gets closer, which will be a lot of fun because it's a fun job, but it's going to be a tough job for Chaim Bloom.
Yeah. Before we finish, I'm curious, how do you think Cora is going to do this year? I mean, he came in 2018 and it was a stacked house. I mean, he had everything he needed. And he's coming into pretty much the Twilight Zone version of that now. What do you think it's going to be like for him this year when the chips are down?
Well, you know, if there's somebody that's best to handle this insane infield situation, it's probably Alex Cora, right? It takes one to know one. And I think he's going to know defensively, you know, who's the best guy to go where, because you talk about all of the shuffling around and, you know, changing of hats of a lot of these players. And the versatility, that's good, but also confusing. Cora is the right guy, I think, to manage that and to be able to see that stuff. I think he was the guy that won with the Red Sox. He looked great with them, and he had a different team, but I think that it was a no-brainer for the Red Sox to bring him back. And yeah, sure, it comes with the baggage of whatever that the headlines are going to be and all that stuff. But yeah, I personally think it's time to turn the page and move on. I think Cora addressed it well. And on the baseball side of things, I think he's worth the brief headache just because of what he's able to do with just managing this team. The big question is going to be, how does he manage the pitching? Because his job is a lot harder now, managing the pitching staff with a lot less weapons. And that's going to be a big factor, and it's going to make it that much more important to figure out what the best infield is, because the Red Sox are going to have to put up runs. I think they have a much better chance of being competitive this year. I don't expect them to be slouches whatsoever, but they're going to have to put up runs, and that's going to mean they need to have the most efficient and effective lineup offensively and defensively to bail out their pitching staff, and I think Cora is the right guy to figure that out.
It'll be very, very interesting. We'll just have to wait and see. I mean, that's the most maddening thing. More than any other year that I can remember, there's so much of 2021 for the Red Sox that's really just about, I mean, like with Eduardo Rodriguez and Chris Sale, it's wait and see. Not even talking about like who Bloom's going to get or who he's going to trade, but just like there are so many things that are just, we have to be patient. It's driving me nuts, honestly, but I'm excited and this has been great as always.
Yeah, love talking some Red Sox, and they're an exciting team. They're an exciting team because they got a lot of talent and a lot of holes and a lot of interesting ways to try to figure it all out.
I'm very excited for them to be like, you know what, we've decided all of our infield prospects are now pitchers.
You never know at this point. You never know.
Yeah, I would not put it past them. Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode of Locked On Red Sox. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at GFSTARR1. You can follow Locked On Red Sox at LO_Red Sox. Also, check out Locked On MLB Pods on Twitter. That is our national account that covers all of Major League Baseball on our network. And we have amazing, amazing hosts all over the network. So even if you are not necessarily a fan of the team that a certain host is covering on a different show, each of our hosts brings something different to the table. That's what makes this network so special. So check out Locked On MLB Pods. Don't forget to subscribe to Locked On Red Sox so you never miss an episode. Have a great, great rest of your Monday. And as always, go Red Sox.